So hello and welcome to the BAM comic book podcast. If it's comic books, movies and TV, we'll be talking about it right here. Although this time, in a special episode, we'll only be talking about one movie. It's the return of your homecoming queen, Spider-Man. Was that a good pun?
I did, that was very good.
Okay, thank you. So as you can tell, that isn't Neil's dulcet Scottish tones on the other end of the line. Well, I'm not good. He's gone through phases, bless him. So it's your boy here, Stu Taylor. Neil and Carly are not on this episode as they haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming. Shock horror. So I've wheeled in two very special guests. The one you've already heard, it's the return of Lucy James.
Hello. Oh, I got an applause.
You got an applause. You got one applause there. Sorry, I didn't join in on that one. And also joining us this time, for the very first time, is Gillan McAllister.
Hello. Oh, thank you very much indeed. And again, Stu does not applaud.
Sorry, I'm busy. I'm managing. Sorry. I'm applauding from my heart.
Yes.
So as I've already said, we're going to be talking about Spider-Man Homecoming. So I should probably just say, this is obviously audio only, but I've got my video screens up and I can see that Lucy is currently doing her makeup, which is multitasking to the limit.
It's very good multitasking, but it's because Gillan and I are going to the Pride Parade in London after this.
So if that gives you a sense of timing, what's happening today, it's Pride.
Yeah.
So
it's Pride.
The guys are taking
Pride,
time out on a Saturday morning to talk about Spider-Man. You lucky people.
A wonderful combination for a Saturday, really.
Exactly. So it probably goes without saying this is going to be very spoiler heavy. So if you haven't seen the movie yet,
this will be a really short podcast.
It'll be a very short podcast. So I'm trying to think if we could do a spoiler-free summary review from each of you. If we start with Lucy, if you could just summarise in as spoiler-free as possible your thoughts on Spider-Man.
Well, it is the best Spider-Man movie.
Boom. That's good.
But...
oh, there's caveats.
This is the movie that has burned me out on the MCU.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good summary. Right, you've got to try and match that there.
All right. I really, really liked it, but I really wanted to love it. And I think by them trying to distance themselves from previous incarnations of Spider-Man, they sort of lost that weight of responsibility and lack of emphasis on consequences, which I think is a big part of the character. So it's very lightweight, very breezy, lighthearted, and easily digestible, but it doesn't have that core that made me love Spider-Man 2 still as my favourite Spidey incarnation on the big screen.
Wow, okay. Well, that's a couple of surprises. I wasn't expecting that.
We did say we had opinions.
It's good. I'm not complaining. It's good. My take on it is I absolutely loved it. I kind of went in pretty sure that I'd enjoy it, but pretty sure I'd come out going, I actually didn't. I think for those 2 hours, I just thoroughly enjoyed it. I would have had difficulty finding fault in it, which would make for a very boring podcast if it was just me doing this. So I'm glad that you guys have got opinions. So that's our spoiler-free summary. Now's the chance now to turn off or come back after you've seen it. Never turn off. Always come back.
Just leave the podcast playing in the background?
Exactly, yeah.
Just take the headphones out.
Okay, so I'm going to kick off quickly. One of the things I really liked about this movie was the fact there was no origin. We didn't have to have an origin.
Oh, my God.
And
if I saw Uncle Ben die one more time.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was... I mean, this is coming off the back of what... when was Amazing? Was that 5 years ago now, Amazing Spider-Man? Obviously, two or 3 years ago. So it's kind of like people don't really need to see that. And it was kind of brave, I thought, for them not to do that. So that to me was like, yep, yeah, thumbs up. I'm going to do a quick summary because I'm kind of really keen to hear what you guys got to say. So I like the fact it was standalone. I'm pretty sure if you haven't seen any MCU movies, you could go and watch this and pretty much pick it up. You had, obviously it starts off with the tie-in to the last Avengers movie, but you kind of got a bit of exposition. You kind of got the hang of what was going on. You got a summary of Civil War in a really cool, YouTube-y kind of style, which I thought was really good. Even for a crusty old dude like me, who's not down with the kids, I thought that was really cool. I genuinely thought it was laugh-out-loud funny. Gillan's looking stony-faced, I'm saying this.
I'm nodding in agreement.
Yeah, Lucy's nodding. So in a very quick summary, I like the fact it was kind of like an 80s movie transplanted in 2017. So it had, obviously, the obvious nods to Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but also I thought it had loads of kind of Breakfast Club references or a kind of vibe. And one thing I don't know if you guys picked up on, but I actually thought it had a lot of Back to the Future to it, where Peter Parker was kind of like a Marty McFly. And obviously the high school linkage. So I kind of thought, I thought it was very good. I also think there's probably, I wasn't quite sure who it was aimed at, whether it was aimed at the dads who were going to take their kids to see it, so they got something out of it. I don't know if a lot of that would have kind of flown with a lot of kids or younger audiences who probably haven't seen the likes of those movies, or, which I think is horrific, but apparently a lot of kids, you know, in their 20s haven't seen these movies, or even The Goonies. But that's another podcast.
I work with Oscar Deus, who has never seen, apparently, any good film from the 80s or 90s. He hasn't seen Terminator 2.
What?
He hasn't seen Back to the Future, Terminator, any John Hughes, and it absolutely kills me.
This is depressing. This is another podcast. So anyway, that's my initial take. So I want to go to Gillen first, because he's got this stony face thing going on, which is awesome. So
that's my Saturday morning face. That's okay.
It is quite early on a Saturday.
It is quite early, sorry.
Well, when we say quite early, it's 9:30, so...
on a Saturday, so you can minus, like, 3 hours from that.
That's true. So go on, Gillen, come on, give us your hot take on Spider-Man Homecoming.
As I said, I really, really liked it. I think there were certain beats in it that were perfect. Certainly, Keaton as Vulture, I think, was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the highlights of the movie. And he felt like a relatable villain. In that his motivations made sense, certainly within context of the MCU and context of just general everyday life in the real world. There were certain elements where I thought, like, I didn't think the cast, the high school cast, as you're pointing out, was one of the highlights of it, but I don't think the cast themselves were fully fleshed out for a movie that was weighing in, around 2 hours, maybe 2 hours and change.
Mm.
You could have done a lot more in that world. Obviously, they don't want to rehash things that have happened before. But you think about it in the Maguire Spider-Man trilogy, they don't really delve into much on Flash. It's just like he's a flash in the pan, so to speak. In the first movie, it's mainly about Mary Jane and Peter Parker with that. And it's the same sort of here where it's Peter Parker and his best friend Ned. And you have got this wonderful cast of characters. You just want to spend more time with them. And I think that's a claim thing about that cast, where I'd rather spend an extra 15 minutes getting to know them than seeing Spidey web sling around the city. I actually quite like the fact that you don't see that, irrespective of what the trailer showed of Spider-Man and Iron Man flinging themselves through the city. This feels like it's building up to that moment in a later movie.
Yeah.
Maybe the second or third movie in this new trilogy. Will have that iconic scene of Spidey working his way through Manhattan. And I quite like that. You know, you see him climbing that monument and he's sort of scared about the height. And it's like, this is really cool. We haven't seen this version of Spider-Man yet. And I really like they actually brought that into it.
It's actually interesting you brought up the Iron Man and Spidey swinging through the streets, which was in the trailer. Did you read about that shot, the reason that was shot?
What you in terms of it was just made especially for the trailer.
Yeah. So that was never going to be in the movie. That was just literally, we need to get an establishing shot of the two of them together. And the shots that are in the movie weren't dynamic enough for a trailer. So apparently that was never going to be in the movie. That was just for marketing only.
Oh.
There you go. Secrets revealed.
I've got to ask, it was thumbs up from the other two people on this podcast, but about the suit and particularly about the Karen AI. Talks to quite a lot during the movie. What's the thoughts?
I liked the suit, but I thought they went way too, you know, Iron Man suit with it. It's basically carbon copy, right? And I just felt like Spider-Man didn't need to have that much. And like, I like the bit where, you know, there was the joke about like training wheels mode activated, training the wheels mode deactivated and stuff. I liked that because it kind of fed into the whole Tony Stark surrogate father storyline part. But ultimately, does he need that much stuff? I mean, I know that he kind of does later on, but I felt like introducing it in this movie was part of the problem that I had with this movie is that I felt it was it was the most Marvel by the numbers film, I think, out of all of them so far.
Okay.
And did you see how many writers it had on it? I had like 6, and I was like, oh, God. One of them was John Francis Daly, which I thought was weird, as in like the guy from Freaks and Geeks.
That kind of makes sense, though, because he helps deal with a lot of the high school stuff.
I think he must have done, because that kind of humour. But no, I mean, I liked the suit. I felt like they could have stripped away the fat of the training wheels mode part for later. Because it sort of undermined the fact that he like the whole film is he is a kid, right? And he it's him learning how to not only control his powers but find his place within the wider web of the Avengers, right?
So basically
giving him all of those powers so early just didn't feel very it didn't feel like it gave him that much time to grow as a hero. It's just sort of like, oh, you've got your powers, immediately thrown in, right?
Yeah, I mean, what's the intention of that? Is it like every year Tony Stark will come back to him and go, I think you're allowed these extra powers, so try this set of five. Next year we'll renegotiate for your birthday about what powers you get as you grow older. And the instant kill thing, right? It's a nice joke, but it feels really weird within context of the actual film, because why would that suit have that particular power?
Iron Man has killed, though, right? I think it's not explicit, but I think there was a scene more recently, I think it was in Age of Ultron, when they attack Hydra, and he takes out that group in the room, and he's just like, oh, nice chat, and I got the impression he killed them. And I think there's situations, definitely in the first Iron Man movie, where he's...
Well, wasn't that the thing that sparked off Civil War, is that the woman comes up to him and goes, you killed my son?
Yeah, but that was more accidental, wasn't it, really? I think he would have kill mode engaged.
Would you factor that particular part into the suit that you're giving to a teenager?
Well, that's the thing, it was all like training wheels situation. I mean, my take on this is I think it's misleading. I don't think you're going to see that kind of suit in the following Spider-Man movies. I think that, you know, he's going to carve his own path. For me, it felt different, because obviously that's not in something in the comics. One thing I should say to listeners is, like, Gillan and I have a long established history of being comic book geeks together. So we've talked long and hard about all of the Marvel movies since pretty much Iron Man. I thought it's great, made for some great comedy, great audio comedy. But I don't think you're going to see this in future movies. I think you're going to see like the typical Spider-Man suit. You kind of got a taste of Peter doing his science geeky experiments anyway, trying to make web fluids. I think you're going to see more of that. That's one thing.
Yeah, he had a lot of good geeky t-shirts.
Yeah. So I think they didn't explore too much about it. I mean, there's the whole thing, him doing the Stark internship was to mislead Aunt May. But I think, I think they're going to take that from the comics and have him as a scientist geek. I think you're going to see him. At the end of the day, he's 15, he's not going to be a science genius yet. But I think as the next movies come along, you're going to see him become more of a science dude. So he's going to be less reliant on Stark, I feel.
I hope so. It certainly felt like this movie was the one where Stark was actively pulling away.
But he wasn't... Actually, one thing I'd say is, what I was surprised about is not how little, but... No, I will say, actually, how little Robert Downey Jr. was actually in the movie compared to how it's been marketed. Like, you look at
that... I can understand that, but I am glad he's in it less.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think it's really good. But I was a bit more concerned when I saw the poster, and it was literally like a giant Iron Man. And, oh, look, there's Spider-Man as well. And, oh, here's another shot of Robert Downey Jr. on the poster, just in case you didn't get that it's an Iron Man movie, sort of. But it's not. And that's what I thought was really good and quite surprising. I think Jon Favreau had more time than Downey Jr. by a long shot.
Yeah.
John, happy felt like an exposition machine, you know?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Tell me what you're doing right now so I can inform the audience about your actions. And it was like, again, happy, lovely little element of the wider MCU, but I don't think so unnecessary.
So you both felt it was quite tied into the MCU then? My thing I said earlier about how I feel that someone could come in and watch that and get it. You don't think they could? Do you think there'd be...
I don't know.
Okay.
Especially the way they were dropping in like references to like the Sokovia Accords.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, Captain America, I'm pretty sure he's a war criminal now. There was a lot of that kind of stuff. But also, I think if you came in without seeing the other MCU movies, you could enjoy it, but you would be missing out on the context that makes it more valuable.
Right. Okay. No, I'd buy that. Okay. I kind of want to watch it again now and see if I was watching it through rose-tinted spectacles in a way then, because I felt it was proper standalone.
I think you could track 20 minutes out of that movie.
Yeah.
MCU stuff alone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Make it like a fully standalone piece. Just to raise, just before we wander off the subject, something about the insta-kill.
Yeah.
And this is more about Adrian Toomes. So, completely empathise with the character.
Yeah.
Like the idea this guy has set up a whole separate outfit so he can look after his family and look after his crew's families as well. Felt like a really tight-knit sort of group of people. And then the fella whose name escapes me, but the guy who plays the original Shocker.
Right, yeah.
Kills him, And it's done as a sort of joke of, is that not the anti-grav gun? It's like, no, that's the other gun.
Yeah, yeah.
And okay, that's a throwaway line, it's sort of funny, but there's no remorse there.
No, you have just incinerated someone.
It's like,
Oops, I've erased him from time and space.
It's like, I've had an argument with someone in my crew. Everyone has arguments. You don't like completely kill someone and then just go, whatever. So I felt that was a weird character beat that felt very out of place. And
okay.
Especially when you factor in later on how good Keaton is elsewhere, especially the car scene on the drive to homecoming.
We'll come to that in a minute, actually.
The bit where he picks him up, where Peter goes to the house for prom and he answers the door, was probably the only moment in that film where I went, oh!
Well, we've come to it now. So basically that's the twist, isn't it, I guess. Did you guys see that coming?
Not at all. One thing I did think, and I'll ask to see if you guys thought the same. Initially, the door opens, you see Keaton, or Tomb, should I say. And for about 10 seconds, I thought, he's worked out who Peter is, and he's kidnapped his entire family. And then he starts doing old dad thing.
So you cool with that? I mean, I know that's almost a bit, I guess, kind of lazy. There's a term for, I forgot what the term is now, but it's a term of writing where it's like a coincidence kind of thing, which is like an unrealistic coincidence. Of all the odds of all the girls he's dating happens to be.
I think Spider-Man has an established history with every single family member or relative or friend has some sort of superheroic or supervillain connection. Yeah. Well, I can completely understand why they did it, because they needed to have that extra layer of connection between Adrian Toomes and Peter Parker, and work for that particular story beat without going, how are we going to get the two of them crossing over as civilians?
Mm.
But I would love to see a Spider-Man movie where the supervillain doesn't find out who Peter Parker actually is.
That's a fair comment.
So it's like Green Goblin, Doc Ock, Venom, Lizard, and Green Goblin Part 2 with Amazing Spider-Man. Everybody knows you. And there is, I mean, that is part of the Spidey lore, but then there are villains out there who don't know who he is. And I would like for them to play around with that a little bit more rather than going, oh God, you find me again.
Yeah.
And then that becomes, I think, well, at least with the Ultimate Spider-Man series, that becomes almost a joke where he's constantly trying to hide a secret identity and everyone just finds out through various ways.
Yeah. No, that's a fair comment. I thought the key, that twist, I didn't really see that coming. What I did think was going to be a twist was the whole Michelle thing. I got the feeling there was something going on with her. And of course, there was a kind of a reveal at the end of the movie where she's actually, well, I guess Mary Jane, which was quite cool. She was referred to as MJ.
I saw that coming.
You did?
From a mile off. Just the way that she was like, oh, the kooky. The thing is, so when I was watching it, I was like, I know that Liz is the object of his affection, and I know that absolutely nothing will happen with her. Like, she just felt like such a one-dimensional character that, like, I just couldn't see anything happening in her. Whereas now we know MJ was, like, interesting and snarky, funny, and had quips.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they've given her quips. She's going to be important. That's going to be MJ.
It was totally an 80s riff, wasn't it? 80s movie riff, so.
And also, like, I don't really know who the actress is, Zendaya.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I see her quite a lot in, like, she pops up on Twitter and stuff. It's like, oh, Zendaya's at this event, like, at the Met Gala, or she's got her own Barbie doll or something. And I was like, she's way more important as an actress and very famous to have just a very background role.
Yeah, she's totally coming back. Actually, I think the next big movie she's in, she's starring in a movie with Wolverine next year, The Greatest Showman, with your old man Hugh Jackman.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
That's only, I've never really heard of her. I know she's kind of, I guess, is she a Disney actress or is that
the wrong one? I think she's ex-Disney.
Yeah. I thought she was great. I would like to see more of her. That goes back to what Gil said, I think, a lot of those supporting characters. I don't think
Ali Sheedy.
Yes, that's the one. There's another character from that group, was Betty Brant, who was on the TV screen a lot of the time with her co-host in the high school TV.
They were amazing.
So, nerd alert. So basically, Betty Brant was like Peter Parker's first girlfriend way back in the first Spider-Man comics. And the actress who played her, I'm putting the pronounces wrong, Angourie Rice. She was in The Nice Guys, which I saw recently, which was absolutely brilliant. And she was phenomenal in that. So when I saw her appear on the TV screen at the beginning of the movie, I thought, all right, she's going to be in this a lot. And she wasn't. So I think it does seem like they've just gone, we're going to get these people in for three movies, yeah, and then they're going to redevelop them, perhaps, in the later ones.
But yeah, I think every time it cut to the student TV, you knew you were in for a good time. You knew there was going to be a great joke. And also the chess club kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So you knew it.
No, some great. No, it's great. Great sense of humor to it. So yeah, I mean, if we go back to Michael Keaton and Adrian Toomes, because he was never called the Vulture, right, in the movie?
I don't think they ever outright said it was the Vulture.
I think the Shocker. Was he called the Shocker? I think he was the only one who was named.
Where he's like, oh, what are you? Is this pro wrestling? You can be the Shocker.
Yeah.
It's just inferred as a joke, which I think works actually better in context.
Exactly.
The guy. It's more of a side note, but the guy that plays the original Shocker. It is in a phenomenal film called The Invitation.
I thought you were going to say he was in a phenomenal movie called Prometheus, because he was.
No. I do not want to see any of us do a spit take if I ever said that. One of those things, yes, because you might remember from Prometheus and go, God, that guy cannot act.
Yeah.
Watch The Invitation, phenomenal. It's one of those movies, the more you say about it, the more you spoil. So I will simply say, Invitation is about a guy being invited to his ex-girlfriend's house for dinner.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's just all set in one house, and he's phenomenal, and he's brilliant in it.
Unlike this.
Right. Yeah, sorry, that's...
Yeah, unlike this.
This whole thing.
So, would go back to Keaton, I would argue that this is another example of perhaps it's reversing the curse of the MCU villain. We've had two for two now, I think. We've had, like, Kurt Russell in Guardians giving us a kind of a three-dimensional character who happens to have villainous intentions. And I think Keaton as Adrian Toomes as this kind of working class Joe who's kind of trying to make it ends meet, as you said earlier, actually, about, you know, he's just trying to do right for his family. He isn't necessarily a villain. He's got villainous intentions, but...
His intentions? He's just trying to make a living. Which is okay.
He is, but the way that he sort of escalates that from, yeah, we're going to kill that guy.
Yeah.
Sort.
Yeah.
Do you think he kind of came full circles? Like the end credit sequence where you see him in lockup with meeting old Matt Gargan, aka the Scorpion Kids. And the whole bit of dialogue where he's saying about, I hear you know who Spider-Man is. And he goes, well, if I knew he was, I'd have killed him already. Yeah. Do you think... I mean, the obvious thing I guess a lot of people will take away from that is like, oh, he's gonna sit on that till he gets out. He's gonna get revenge. I kind of think it wouldn't surprise me if you see him almost becoming a bit of a Loki character, where he kind of flips between the good guy and bad guy. At the end of the day, Peter saved his life, and his daughter's life. So I wouldn't surprise me if he does crop up in the next movie. He may end up almost siding with him.
Yeah.
To a reason. Yeah, I think that could be a red herring. You could have him perhaps putting together, you know, the Sinister Six, as they've been talking about, is finally going to happen in one of these movies. Perhaps he's in it.
I was going to say, that's what that post-credit sequence felt like to me.
Yeah.
It was the, hey guys, Sinister Six is coming. Hold on. We're not going to... I thought, especially if you use an actor like Michael Mando, who is criminally underrated, really plays criminals.
He does.
But, like,
I managed to catch up with Better Call Saul now.
Incredible.
Yeah, and he's so phenomenal in that.
But also Vast in Far Cry 3.
Of course, yeah.
He just sort of, he steals every scene he's in, basically. And so when I saw him in it, I was like, yes, Vast is in it. It's going to be amazing. And then he's sort of, you know, like, bye.
He is just end credits dude, isn't he, really?
Yeah. But I hope that means that he'll be used to greater effect in a future movie.
Well, that's why I think those little nods were done much better in this, in some previous MCU movies where they go, this one's for the fans.
Yeah.
Not wink.
Yeah.
They set these Easter eggs within context of the story. So, like, the Michelle MJ reveal, if you just went, I'm called MJ, and left it at that, except, it's a bit clunky. But the payoff is, you know, I'm called MJ to my friends. Mm. I don't have any friends. And that grinds it in the story. And it's the same, even with the little, the very tiny sort of Miles Morales nod wink from Don Glover.
Should we talk about that?
This neighborhood, I don't want anything bad to happen to him. Again, that's sort of, initially it's a nod to the wider MCU and Miles Morales, but within the story it makes sense. It's about people protecting their families.
Yeah.
As much as what Keaton does with his job, as much as what Peter Parker's doing to try and protect people, and it's the same with Donald Glover's character of, I want to protect,
my nephew.
So for people who don't know the comic-y backstory on that run, so Donald's playing Aaron Davis, who in the main Marvel continuity, if I remember rightly, he plays the Prowler. But in the Ultimate Universe continuity, he also plays that character and happens to be the uncle to Miles Morales, who is another Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So, again, Donald Glover's kind of like a decent enough actor not to have like a spit-in-a-cough appearance, which is what he had in Homecoming. That does seem that they're leading him into perhaps another movie.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Especially after the whole uproar of people actually wanted him to play Spider-Man proper.
Well, Miles Morales Spider-Man, wasn't it? Which I think, I don't know. I get why they've gone the Peter Parker route again. I just think for the average Joe cinema goer, if they have someone called Miles Morales as Spider-Man, they're going to go, I don't understand what this is.
Where's Peter Parker?
Yeah, yeah. I think that looks like they're going to try and establish that over the course of a trilogy.
What do you feel about Ned Leeds essentially being Gangan? Miles Morales' best friend in the Ultimate Comics.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine with that.
Fine with that?
I never really liked Ned Leeds in the comics anyway. I haven't read a lot of current Spider-Man stuff, but when I was reading it back in the 80s, they killed off Ned Leeds. So he was very much a generic character. I think he was married to Betty Brant, I think, in the comics, and it turns out he gets framed and is framed to be the Hobgoblin and then gets murdered, and it turns out he wasn't a Hobgoblin anyway. So he was kind of a bit of a shit character. I never really liked him. So this take on him, for me, it was kind of like, it was Ganky, but with... They just called him Ned. It was a totally different character. And I think a lot of the characters in this were new takes on things. Like we said about Michelle, MJ. You know, that was a completely different take to how she is in the comics. And also, thankfully, to Kirsten Dunst, who I like as an actress, but I thought she was awful in those original Spider-Man trilogy and wasn't the Mary Jane.
Because if you see her now, like in Fargo, you're like, oh my god, Kirsten Dunst is an incredible actress. Then you go back and watch Spider-Man, you're like, oh, well, we were all young ones.
Yeah. I just thought she was unrelatable. I just disliked her. And I was like, I don't know why Peter's bothering, because like, she's just a whiny, not very sympathetic character. And that's not the actress's fault. That's just how they presented her. So I digressed. Sorry. Yeah. So to go back to your question, Ned, the new Ned, great. Loved him. Brilliant. Great dialogue. Comedy relief. Actually, that's probably not fair, because I think a lot of them had comedy relief aspects.
But he was very good. Yeah. I liked him a lot. Can I talk about a bit of the film that I think they should have taken a scalpel and removed completely?
Go on.
The ferry.
Okay.
So when I was watching the film, oh God, I felt like it was too long. That was the thing that I actually felt about it. And at one point, I did feel myself getting bored, and it was the part where Peter turns up at, the Vulture's house and they open the door. That was the bit that got me back into it. But I felt like, so that sequence, right? It's him, like, stopping the weapons dealers, and he gets to have this big show of force, and he gets to do all this. So, like, I don't understand why they didn't combine that with the Washington thing.
Okay.
Because it felt like the very Marvel thing of having a massive action set piece that ultimately doesn't say very much and just causes destruction for the sake of it. I felt like you could have merged those two things, and you could have even had Iron Man flying at the end of the Washington Monument part and have his little discussion with him then rather than that, because I just felt like the thing that I'm maybe getting sick of with is that everything has to be fucking massive and have special effects coming out of the wazoo and, you know, like, hundreds of incidental casualties and cause thousands of dollars worth of damage, where I felt like they should have started small and kept it small, or at least kept it to, like, reined it in a bit. Because what I did like is that in this movie, and what they're doing in the MCU in general, is they're exploring consequences more. So, like, oh, you know, obviously the Accords, you have the... when they were going through the street and he was, like, wrecking people's gardens, and it just felt like more impactful that way, rather than just being, oh, it's Spider-Man, it doesn't matter, it's the Avengers, we're just going to cause all this damage and no one's really going to care.
Yeah.
And obviously that's the whole point of why he's salvaging in the first place, right? It's because of all the damage that was left. And I felt like having that part was totally undermined by having the massive ferry part. It's just like, it just annoys me that I think it's lazy filmmaking on their half, is that they feel that they have to have that in every single movie, getting sick of it.
Because I kind of thought it was scaled back as far as action goes. Like obviously the ferry thing was the kind of the big, I'll say big CGI set piece, but I felt it was scaled back. So it was very much Friendly Neighbourhood, street level ish kind of villainy.
The more I think of it, the more I felt like they could have scaled it back more.
Even more. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Do you know what? I totally agree with you now. Now I'm thinking back, I think if they could have combined the Washington and ferry scenes, yeah, that would have made probably made it a bit tighter. What about you, Gil? You're solemnly sitting there going,
No, I agree with his point. The one thing I was going to raise was, how the hell does he get back to the mainland?
Spiders float.
Well, I just assume that Tony That's picked him up.
On theme park of that scene, he's just lying.
Because wasn't this the scene, at the end of the scene, he was like, yeah, give me back the suit. He's like, I haven't got any clothes. And it cuts to him going back to the apartment when he's in like a tourist T-shirt. I presume that Iron Man would have just lifted him up.
I survived.
Iron Man fixes the ferry. Yeah. And then gets off, and there's a long panning shot of basically Spidey at the top of the ferry going, ah!
And
then that's to Spidey being on the top of a rooftop. How did he get there?
Oh, Gillen, come on.
Just sitting, I will say my absolute 100% favourite shot in the entire movie. It's very early on, and it's after that lovely montage of him trying to help people in and around his burrow.
Right.
And it cuts to the sunset, him sitting on the rooftop, just eating something with a mask open slightly.
Yeah.
That was cool. It's like, I have waited my entire life to see that. And it feels like none of the other Spidey films managed just to capture that quintessential Spider-Man moment.
Yeah.
It's a thing of beauty. It's like, screen grab, I'm having that as a wallpaper.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
I've had a thought. This is the thing that really annoyed me. So you know how he was messaging Happy, right? And Happy just wasn't responding.
Yeah.
How does he go from Happy ignoring all his calls and everything, every time he tries to ring him, going to voicemail, to him talking to Happy about moving day? You know when he has that first conversation and Happy's like, oh, no, it's moving day, blah, 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 that box over here, the plane's coming, whatever. That was a phone call of convenience there.
But you need that, otherwise the movie would have kind of ground to a halt of like a montage of 6 months of him trying to get through on the phone. One character we haven't spoken about, which is a completely different take on this particular character, was Aunt May, or just May, as she was known.
May.
By Marissa Tomei. How do we feel about fit May? Sexy May.
I would have happily seen more of her.
Yeah.
That sounds a bit weird in context of what you just said. I mean, in more character beats, more scenes with her.
Yeah.
One thing that they tapped into Peter's initial appearance in Civil War that they didn't really elaborate on this, and again they had time to, was their lack of money. There's a reference in Civil War where he's dumpster diving to get parts together. Not okay, fair enough, at this point he's got the Stark internship thing going on, but it would have been nice for, again, this is me talking about that core of Peter Parker, like having to deal with, you know, money issues, food issues and stuff, and I felt like they could have done those bits with May and him in those scenes.
Maybe that's the next movie. Maybe that's where they're going to bring in the whole Daily Bugle and J.J. and Jameson stuff, you know, and him having to get part-time work because money's tight. I don't know. I totally agree with you. I guess that there's only so much they could do, and I guess they wanted to kind of break away from the previous takes on Spider-Man, where it did feel it was something different. Like, say, obviously, so you just eschew the origin. You don't, you know, you got bitten by a spider. That's all they refer to it as. Which one of my favourite lines where he says, you know, do you lay eggs? It's just like, it's just great stuff. It's just stuff that's exactly what you'd ask someone if they had powers of a spider.
We're saying about, just calling back to what we were saying earlier on about Uncle Ben and the whole origin story not being there.
Yeah.
They lift a very iconic scene from one of the Spider-Man issues, early Spider-Man issues, in the third act where he has to lift
the rubble stuff.
And having motivational VO being Tony Stark rather than maybe a flashback to Uncle Ben. I understand they couldn't just drop a absolutely new voice from someone who hasn't been referred to for the entire film. But that felt more like that shouldn't be Stark. That should either be Peter amping himself up or some sort of distant flashback to Uncle Ben.
See, that scene, you've reminded me of that scene. That, to me, I thought was quite dark, because initially before he does that, when he's there and he's crying out for help, and it was a really great performance. It was actually really distressing, because it was like, oh shit, you are a kid, and he's crying and you know like, help me, someone help me, and it was like, oh, that's a bit dark. But I thought it was brilliant, because it was like, oh yeah, because he is a kid, he is 15, just because he's got these powers, you know, he is still a teenager, and I thought that was quite cool. But no, I guess, I don't know, I got the Uncle Ben thing. I don't even think Ben's even mentioned in the movie at all.
They say, like, someone says at some point the thing with his uncle,
right,
I think,
okay,
at one point, and that's pretty much the only mention he gets.
Yeah. And I was happy with that, to be honest, because I think it's still very soon after, you know, the recent almost trilogy we had, the amazing movies. So I think it's like we've already had that. I guess that's something they could probably revisit if they do. Although I pray they don't do an origin. They don't need to do an origin. And that's one thing I thought was interesting, comparing it to like Batman v Superman, where like you really don't need to do an origin for Batman. Everyone knows.
No, you know, I remember when
they still have to do the origin.
Batman versus Superman, and they showed Crime Alley. I just went,
yeah.
Oh,
just, you don't need to.
They've biffed it.
Mm. Well, I digress. So let's bring it back to some trivia in a minute. Actually, no, before we do a trivia, so, in your opinions, where does this movie sit with the other Spider-Man movies? I know Gillen started off by proclaiming that Spider-Man 2 is still his favourite. Let's go with Lucy first. So how do you feel this sits within, I don't know, let's say
it's
top three?
Top three Spider-Mans. Yeah. It's probably my favourite Spider-Man movie.
Okay.
But, as I said, it is the movie that's made me sort of, it's burned me out now on Marvel movies.
Right.
I think. Which is weird. I think part of it is not really to do with the movie itself. I think part of it is to do with the Marvel machine and just the fact that they're everywhere.
Mm.
And like, we were doing a video on it at work. I hadn't seen the film by this point, so the guys did it. You should watch it on youtube.com/gamesportuniverse. But it's like the guys are doing a video about like why they loved Homecoming so much. And I was watching the trailer, because I hadn't actually seen the trailer before I went in. And I watched the trailer coming back, and I was like, holy hell. Like, the promotional materials have shown, like, so much of that film.
Mm.
And it's the fact that it's on like, every billboard. It's the 30-second unskippable advert on every YouTube video. And it's the fact that, I don't know, I think it's because with films like Logan and Deadpool being such outliers to, like, regular Marvel and regular, you know, like the regular superhero movies that we get, I'm sort of getting real fed up of the quip, action, friends, not friends, quip, you know, however Marvel does their movies.
Yeah.
I think Spider-Man for me is the one that's sort of gone, I overall liked it, but taking a step back now.
Okay. So before I come to you, Gillen, actually, I want to pick up what Lucy just said about when you referenced Deadpool and Logan. So that's interesting you say that, because for me, I would also throw in Homecoming as three superhero movies that break the mould, where Logan was a kind of a Western, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Hugh Jackman's Unforgiven. Deadpool was just, oh, I don't know how you describe that, it was just so off the wall, it was totally unique. And I felt Homecoming was a teen drama which happened to have superpowers in it. So yeah, I kind of interesting you say that you felt it felt too formulaic. For me, it almost felt like it broke a formula a little bit on that one. But anyway, so Gillen, your take on where this sits within the wider Spider-Man movie universe.
Before I do that, I will continue on your point.
Okay.
Again, this is coming from a huge Marvel fan.
Mm.
I'm similar to Lucy in that I'm getting a little bit burned out.
Okay.
I've decided from this point on, I'm not going to be watching any trailers for any blockbusters coming up for that exact reason. It was going, this is how it's going to get to this scene, this is going to get, and when the scene happened, you lose any sort of sense of suspense or excitement. Regards to your note that this is breaking the mold, I don't think that's the case. I think you can spin Marvel movies as, here's a spy thriller, here's a sorcery fantasy thing, here's a 60s caper, but it's still the same build. It's still the bit of action, all lighthearted, jokey, which has obviously worked for Marvel all this time, so why should they change it? But I think I would like to see it digress a little bit more. I think like Winter Soldier was the closest thing to try, they've come to breaking.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
because it did genuinely feel like a thriller at times. Actually, one of the best scenes in any of the MCU movies thus far is in that movie where Nick Fury almost gets assassinated. That whole chase sequence, heart was in my throat. This feels like a contemporary action movie rather than a superhero pick, you know? But anyway, rankings, still say Spidey 2, top one, as for the reasons I mentioned right at the start of this podcast. The idea there's that emotional core, that sense of responsibility and consequence. I would put Homecoming next.
Yeah.
But there's a gap.
Okay.
And then it would be probably the first Spidey movie, Spider-Man 3. I know a lot of people hate that movie. I actually really enjoy it. And then Amazing 2. I think Holland's the best version of this Peter Parker. He's the best version of this Peter Parker could be. Maguire had the older Spidey, even though he's still supposed to be high school and stuff like that. He had that fancy. He's had a few years on him.
Yeah.
Whereas Garfield wasn't a great Peter Parker, but I think he was a fantastic Spider-Man. He had the physicality of Spidey, which is that sort of thin, gaunt guy. And the quips were a lot, and there's a lot more quips, I think, it's amazing than here, that landed. Mm-hmm. But even at that, I'd still say it would be Spidey 2, Homecoming, everything else.
So we're going to wind down a bit. Another final question for both of you guys is, what would you like to see in the next Spider-Man movie? Like, we probably covered some of these things already, but if you could summarize what you want to see in the next one. Lucy doesn't want to see it at all. She's done with movies now.
No, I would say, I mean, it's funny you're saying about the John Hughes, the 80s movies. I'd sort of want to see them fulfill that promise more, I think. Maybe rein it in. I'm a big fan of the phrase rein it in right now, clearly. But I would like to see them focus more on the characters rather than, we're going to destroy half of Hell's Kitchen. Oh, no. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather see that, because at the end of the day, you're sort of... I think what Marvel do is they over-invest in their heroes and not as much in, like, the secondary characters. So it's like, at the minute, I don't really care about any of them.
Okay.
It's sort of like, I feel like I should care about May just because Peter cares about May and Peter cares about Liz and whatever, rather than I actually care about them. So I'd rather that.
Okay.
I think. And I want to see more of Donald Glover, because my goodness.
I think we're getting. I think there's no reason they're gonna cast someone like him and they're not gonna be back. That's pretty a shout. Well, exactly. So also a shout out to his scene, the interrogation scene, which I thought was brilliant. Another laugh out loud. Load? I can't even talk. It's Saturday morning. But I think that was almost like a subtle dig, or not very subtle dig, at Batman as well, that whole scene.
Oh, wait, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there was another one as well. What was it? They did another dig at Batman. Oh, I can't remember what it was. They did the interrogation one. They did another one. Oh, no, they did just a general dig at DC with the invisible jet.
Oh, right. Yeah. Nice.
Which I quite liked.
So, Gil, what would you want to see in the next Spider-Man? I don't want to call it Homecoming 2, because it's not going to be called Homecoming. It's going to be called Spider-Man something.
Well, about the invisible jet, I'd like to be able to see the action this time around. Climactic battle. But I was spent going, I think I know what's going on. Setting it on that invisible jet, I think, it felt like they were going to try and do something cool, because there's a moment earlier on where he's clambering underneath the jet, and you see the jet reflect his body.
Yeah.
Mm.
On the top of it. I thought they were going to do something with that and play upon that. But, again, I'm getting off subject here. I'd like to see perhaps a bit more, in regards to the action, a bit tighter, a bit more elaborate, emphasizing Spidey's particular skills.
Okay.
It didn't touch upon the Spidey sense, though I feel like that was inferred. He managed to dodge every single punch that was thrown at him. So maybe a more exploration on his particular powers. A lot more time with cast fleshing them out, and hopefully less ties to the wider MCU. I think it would be quite nice just to have this little corner, and it's dedicated to Peter Parker and being friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, rather than, hey, cameo, do you know this happened? And this is where the conflict is, where everything else.
So that's probably, the next thing I'm going to say is pretty bad news on that one, but apparently there is going to be a mentor type character, or they're supposed to be considering a mentor type character for the next one, so it won't be Downey Jr. I don't know if you'd want one, or even if you choose if you did, but I think I'd be quite interested to see someone like Bruce Banner, the Hulk, in the next one, as his kind of...
Yeah, or maybe figure. Vision.
that'd be
because of the way
comedy.
They were like, oh, Vision's room would be next door. I would actually like that.
That
like
could be good.
What they're doing with Vision.
Oh, can I just show you guys one thing we haven't mentioned? Talking about cameos, Pepper Potts.
Yes.
I was just about to say. I was like, what was she doing there?
No, I'd be turning around going, I'd rather not have so many ties to the wider MCU. I love that scene.
Yeah. I was surprised. Yeah, I thought Gwyneth Paltrow had like walked away from this. I know that. The story goes that Natalie Portman just didn't want to do the second Thor movie, and the reason why we haven't seen her since is she just was not up for it at all. And I assumed Gwyneth Paltrow had gone the same route, where she was like, "No, I'm done with these now." So that was kind of cool.
She needs to fund her her wasp vagina things.
Yeah, she's gone a bit. Well, she's gone Hollywood. You know, a little bit kooky. So to round this up, I want to kind of give you guys a couple of bits of trivia you may not have picked up on. I'm pretty sure one of these you definitely haven't picked up on, because this is like a deep, deep, niche thing.
Deep cut.
So the first thing is, we mentioned Suit Lady, Karen, the voice of Karen. Do we know? Do you know who the voice of Karen is, guys?
Yep, there's a Vision connection.
There is a Vision connection.
From Labyrinth?
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly's the voice of Suit Lady.
That is cool.
And actually going
great
back a little,
eyebrows.
Exactly. And also going a bit niche. So the voice of, I think it's called Friday now, the AI that Tony has in his suit, is an actress called Kerry Condon, who's an Irish actress. She's also Mike Ehrmantraut's daughter in Better Call Saul.
Oh, the one who calls him Puppy.
Yeah.
Oh, I know it.
But that was me digressing. So here's the one that you're not going to know. Okay. I don't think. So Principal Marita in High School.
Yes.
Do we know the deep Marvel connection? No, Gillen's nodding. He knows this.
Oh, what? No.
So the actor Kenneth Choi. The actor Kenneth Choi played Jim Marita in Captain America: The First Avenger. He was a member of the Howling Commandos in the Second World War. So the
Is that why he had a picture of him as in the military behind him?
Yeah. So the takeaway from that is like,
that.
Yeah. So I guess that he's playing his grandson in this. But I thought that was quite cool. Like, yeah. But anyway, that was my deep cut. But Gillen knew that, so it's ruined, because I just thought you guys wouldn't know that one. So,
did you guys watch both post-credits?
Yes.
So good.
Yeah. So I thought it was quite cool that they didn't try and tie it into something like Infinity War. It was kind of like, it's still quite standalone. But the Captain America public service announcements, I thought, were brilliant. And apparently filmed loads. They have filmed tons of this. So I guess it's going to be on the DVD Blu-ray when it comes out.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. Because not only that, it was the way where he goes, and your gym teacher here.
Yeah.
And the gym teacher was standing on the side. It was just like perfect, like physical comedy as well.
Yeah.
But I love that because it was very Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
Obviously Deadpool did the Ferris Bueller. But yeah, the proper Ferris Bueller. It's very Ferris Bueller. No, it's very just sort of like a nice ending.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
That actually,
waiting around for nothing.
Exactly. The whole patience thing at the end, the very end. It was quite funny because people responded well to that, because I guess, you know, I made my mates wait until the very end, and it was kind of, it wasn't, you know, a lead into another movie. It was a kind of a joke, and it worked. People applauded, people laughed, didn't feel annoyed. They had to wait 10 minutes for that. So that's always a good thing. So that's it. Like, we come to the end. So I'm going to do something really lazy and just kind of come back to you guys finally and say, ask you marks out of 5 for Spider-Man Homecoming. Lucy.
3.
Ooh.
I mean that with, I'm not taking halves, no half points on my measurement scale. 3, just because it was an enjoyable romp, but I had issues with it.
Gil?
I'm going to fully embrace the idea of half points, because I need them for this particular thing. Between a 3 and a 4, so I've got to be a 3.5. Same reason, Lucy. I think it was a 4-star movie with certain 3-star trappings.
Ooh.
3-star baggage.
Okay.
Marvel baggage.
So I was going to go for a clear 4, but since Gil opened up the options to do a half point, I'm going to go 4.5.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's the best Spider-Man movie, and it hit a lot of the things I wanted to see from it. I'm actually having different opinions on it after listening to you guys, which is a good thing. But I still think it's still a great movie. I still feel it is standalone, although I do want to see it again to see if I'm actually right on that. It felt standalone, and it kind of did the opposite for you, for me, to you, Lucy, where I actually kind of feel, I'm up for seeing more of this stuff, you know, because it feels like it was doing something different. Although I'm
think it's
go on.
Oh, sorry. I think it was just for me. It's just coming off that, you know, like, Civil War.
Yeah.
Guardians 2, Doctor Strange. It's just, that's like four within a year.
Yeah. And this is the first year we've got three, isn't it? So we've got Thor next. I'm still really excited about Thor, but
I am excited about Thor.
But I think after watching Homecoming and realizing it's very much an 80s movie, and the initial teaser trailer for Thor does pitch it as like an 80s movie as well, and Guardians 2 was kind of an 80s movie, I'm kind of wondering if it's going to be third time's going to be a bit like, yeah, we've had this kind of take. But we'll see. Yeah. It's hard to call it on just a teaser trailer.
No, I do like the marketing for Thor has been very different and very irreverent, and I do like that about it. The weird little vlogs with his roommate.
That's in the movie. Awesome. So anyway, that's it. We're done for another episode. So I'm really grateful for you guys for joining us on this one.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, we'll get you back again, obviously. Yay. So you can find Bam on Twitter and Facebook under Bam Comics Cast. You can also find us on Tumblr. If you listened to the last episode, Neil announced during the show that he just launched an Instagram account. The last time I looked, there was one post from Neil, but we're going to get on that. Next thing will be Snapchat. Well, that you don't want to see that. Please like, review and subscribe on iTunes, Player FM, Stitcher, or however you listen to us. It really does help us get up the charts and get more listeners, which is only a good thing. So, where can they find you guys on the social media world? Lucy.
I am at Lucy James Games for most things.
There you go. Gil?
If you search for Final Fantasy reference here, Nab Gil, N-A-B-G-I-L, same thing, you'll find me on most things. Mostly stalking on Instagram, a little bit of stalking on Twitter.
Awesome. That's it. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks
for having us.
I think we should play out with the original classic 60s Spider-Man theme now, so brace yourselves. Flip away.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like guys. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud.